Session number 15433.
Peter McAleese, side 20. So, you'd finished this Escobar business, and where did you come back to?
I came back to the UK.
To where?
Yeah. And as you'll find, the papers were getting, the tabloids were all getting hit up because one guy had gone on television. Prior to this, when we were in Panama,
yeah.
The Sunday Times phoned up and said, my name is James Adams. I'm about to print a story tomorrow.
Your side of it, yeah.
We'd like your side of it. Normal bullshit they give you. So we agreed to meet him. I says, I'll tell you what. You know, and he knew everything. And in actual fact, Dave had spoken to someone. And the someone had run to the authorities. And it was all, you know... And Adams had picked this up, so he was a fairly smug guy, you know, the Miami Vice type suit and all that. We met him in Panama, and you know, I said, look, you know, why don't you sit in a story, and you'll have something else to come. He says, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, I've got to trust you, you've got to trust me. And I says, you know, I'll give him a word. And I said, I'll tell you what. I says, I'll even take you with me.
What did he say to that?
And he declined. You know.
So they published the story?
No, he didn't. He held it back. And then when I crashed,
He said,
and then what happened is all hell went loose. You know, the one guy who had let go home sold a video to the... See, Dave is terrible for photographs, you know, and videos and that. And he videoed part of the training. This guy took it home for Dave and sold it to... one of these American networks, you know.
All right.
Yeah.
What does Dave do now then?
Dave will have a go at anything. You know, he puts arms deals together for people and whatnot. But you know, ever since that last thing, you know, work has been fairly tight. You know.
Right. So this brings us up to what year is it now?
The last time I got involved was February 1992.
So, and where did you reside in Hereford?
No, by this time I had a house in Telford.
In Telford, right?
Yeah.
How come?
Because my parents lived there.
Oh, I see. Right. Well, they moved down from Scotland.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So you're living in Telford, yeah?
Yeah.
And the wife's with you, or?
Yeah.
And she's there working in the hospital or something, is she?
Yeah, this was just prior to getting into a pub.
No,
that's when I went into pub trade.
So, the question is, what have you done from then until now, basically?
I was in the pub trade for 2.5 years, and I ran a business. You know, I had one pub, and then the brewery came along and said, look, we've got a pub that's fairly rough, can you take it over for us? I says, aye, certainly.
Where's this?
This was in Birmingham.
Which was the first pub?
The first pub was the Gunmakers Arms.
In Birmingham?
In Birmingham.
And the second, the rough pub was?
It was called Lamplighter.
Where's that?
That's in Nichols in Birmingham. It's a real wild area.
Okay.
I got myself stabbed in that one.
All right.
And then the brewery kept on to me, can you, you know, take all our difficult pubs, and I took them all, and I finished up with 14 pubs. And then,
well, you're actually managing them or doing the security on them?
No, I was running the businesses. I leased the pubs, yeah. And what happened was, it was a fantastic thing. I got the one pub, and at the same time, I got an extremely well-paying job at security. Can you see that? So the missus ran the pub. And on our way, and I was getting extremely good money. So it started building up.
What, doing the security on the individual pubs?
No, doing security in London.
Ah, on what sort of things?
You know, banks and whatnot, you know... and I was doing some undercover work as well,
right?
Which was extremely well paid.
Yeah.
And so what it is...
When you're saying security with banks, just briefly, what sort of thing?
Undercover stuff.
Oh, right.
Aye.
What, they expected to be raided or something?
No, it was to do with, you know, misappropriation of stuff.
Of funds, yeah.
Yeah.
Fraud. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, like, you know, for example, there was a building getting built, and there was, you know... contractors were getting contracts because they'd maybe build an extension onto somebody's house, you know.
Right.
You know, a normal thing.
Yeah.
I worked at that, and what it did is it gave me enough deposit for the next pub. And then they said, and after that, after I had three pubs, they let me get into a pub for nothing. And they just say, take your business over, you know, because it's going to mean shutting the pub down. Now, up until I had five pubs, I had a real tight rein on it.
Mm.
And then after, when it started going off, that I could feel loss of control,
mm.
you know, because I didn't have my finger on the pulse as much mm-hmm. as I should have done. As I say, that went on for 2.5 years, and I noticed that, you know, there was pubs taking an awful lot of beer, but the amount of money that was coming in didn't match to the amount of beer they were
sure.
taking. And unbeknown to me, one of my area managers was involved with about five or six of the managers from the pub, and they had a little syndicate organised.
So, yeah.
And what happened was, I'd say, okay, let's go and check the books and at such and such a pub, and I'd go there and everything would be smack on. Yeah, but there would be always a small thing like, you know, maybe a half a barrel of beer out, or, you know, a couple of cases or something missing, or maybe two bottles of spirits.
Over what period of time?
This was about 18 months.
Okay, but if you check the books, would that be half a case of beer a week or a case
no,
of...
No, I'd find it with the pub and say, okay, right, that comes off your profit, because they weren't on a profit basis and it'd be replaced. Can you see that?
Yeah, all right. But how often would a case of beer go missing?
It was...
Or, like, similar items?
Maybe if I did a check every 2 weeks. A case of beer over 2 weeks is two bottles a day.
Yeah.
But what happened was they were emptying my pubs out and they were using the one stock to move around all the pubs. Can you see that?
Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah.
And I picked it up and the accountant never picked it up. And, you know, I just went in there and then...
So you went round and did a spot check?
Aye.
And it's like having a QM store on
Yeah, and I did a spot check in one place and it was £200 extra in the safe. I says, what's this?
Where's that come from?
Yeah. I says, where'd that come from? The guy went, oh, I keep my money. And I says, but you've been told not to keep your money in the safe. And then I says, something's gone wrong here. And I just took stock and it started becoming a bit horrendous.
So,
for example, the electricity bills weren't being paid. You know, the gas bills weren't being paid. But everything went to those pubs. Can you see that? It never came to me, because each pub was being running as a secret, a separate entity. And it's 3 months before you can pick up on a bill.
Yeah.
So what happened then is one guy actually just walked out of the pub and took the takings of the pub with him. Mm. And I went out to Telford and I found him. You know, I tracked him down and he was in a real wild pub in Telford and he had the confidence of all the people there, and he says, don't get in that pub, you'll get torn apart. And I couldn't, you know, my business was, you know, I just suddenly realised.
You say he was in that pub, was he running it?
He was running it.
Right.
And I walked into the pub and I took him outside and I says, please, you know, don't make me do what I'm going to do. You know, I know you've taken money and I'd like it back tomorrow morning. And luckily I spoke to him firmly enough to get the money back the next morning. But, you know, the damage had been done. Can you see that? Yeah. The whole thing just started snowballing through.
So what happened to these blokes that have got being scammed off, basically?
Right. Unless you can't get the police in, you've got to take a civil action against them, because, you know, they're running a business for you. Can you see that? Unless you actually say, right, there's money missing here, and you bring the police in to check it.
Mm.
And so when I went to the police, they said, well, you know, that's between you and them, you know. And I looked at it, and I just decided, I says, it's not for me anymore.
Mm.
Plus the fact my marriage was breaking up.
Oh, really?
Aye.
Yeah.
And, you know, my marriage was under immense pressure. And, you know, I just found my head was, I felt my head was going to burst with the pressure.
Mm.
And I said to my missus, I was buying one pub. You know, I says, you have that pub. And I closed the business down. I finished up penniless. And I arrived back here in London about 2.5 years ago, and all I had was a sleeping bag, a case. I lost a lot, my house, everything. All I had was a case and a sleeping bag and no money. And I got a job at security, and ever since then, it's, you know, it started picking up again.
Really?
But I feel it's been, you know, an uphill fight. There's no resentment about me, you know, about what happened. I mean, when I look at my wife, she was a good woman.
Mm.
It's just that... you know, we should have parted earlier than we did.
Okay. And so you're doing security stuff here. What other sort of security in brief are you doing?
I've been doing bits of surveillance, you know.
Mm.
You know, just the surveillance and like, you know, for example, I looked after a Russian a few weeks back who'd actually been shot, you know.
What, is he wounded?
He was, yeah, wounded twice in the chest.
So he's in hospital?
He was in hospital. You know, I looked after him while he was in hospital. Got him into a safe house, and when it was deemed okay that, you know, I was taken off the job.
All right. And that was paid by Russians?
By the bank, a bank, yeah.
He's a Russian banker.
Yeah.
Because they have it, they're shot, kidnapped, all the rest of it out there.
Yeah.
So that's what you're up to?
Yeah, that's it.
So, and there's enough money in there, more or less? Or?
No.
No.
No, that's just, it pays the bills, it pays my maintenance.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I really love my children, you know, and...
Yeah.
As I say, most of what I earn probably goes towards them.
Right. What sort of age are they?
You know, they're getting that awkward age, you know.
Right.
One's 12 this year, and the other one's 15. Sorry, one's 11 this year, the other one's 15.
All right. Okay.
And I've got to look after my son's street cred.
Okay. And they're up in where? In Telford?
No, Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Yeah.
And you've given up all those pub everything?
Yeah.
For sure. Right. Okay. Oh, yeah. We've gone through it. I don't think there's much more to say, is there? I mean,
I think the ending was good as well.
I mean, would you get involved in any overseas work still?
I'd need to think about it. I mean, all you got to do is look at the physical state I'm in. But there's things like that that motivate me. If somebody said to me, there's a job coming off next month, I want you to be involved in it. The fact is, I probably wouldn't eat anything for the next month and get my weight down and get fit.
Yeah.
It's just that to be honest, I find this a terribly demotivating country to live in. What I feel here is, you know, you've got the establishment here, and if you're not part of it, there's no way you're going, you know. And the other alternative, if you're not part of the establishment, one of the probably other alternatives to make money is to turn to crime, and I'm not a criminal. I may have committed a few criminal acts abroad, attempted to, but not in the stage that I'd cross the authorities here. So, you know, I feel I'm sitting in limbo at the moment. You know, and much as I'm fairly happy, I'm not entirely pleased with my lot. You know, I feel that I'm being misemployed. I feel that I should be managing or leading in some way, but as I say, without feeling sorry for myself, I feel that the chips are stacked against me.
Right. Do you keep much in touch with people from the regiment, regiment?
That's what keeps me alive, you know.
Really?
You meet one of the guys and you chat away, and I give the odd lecture up the regiment,
At Hereford?
At Hereford, you know, and... You know, part of my job is bringing their feet back onto the ground again, you know, because when you get involved in this urban scene, or black soldiering as I'm now calling it, you know, street work, you tend to be training for 2 minutes on the job. Can you see that? Mm. Whereas, you know, in a lot of cases, I could be considered as a Neanderthal, you know.
Compared to the
new generation.
Yeah, yeah.
I was talking to some of the Kiwi SAS, and they were saying that what they feel is the regiment's jungle skills have actually slipped. Now, considering we are the people that taught the Kiwis, you know, the priorities have all changed. I think the regiment has changed with the times, but I don't know if it's for the better.
Mm-hmm. You know, what main differences do you find with the people?
All the guys talk about is high tech. Mm. You know,
for instance.
Well, some of it's classified, you know, but, they're so used to...
Well, the non-classified bits,
You know, like, a lot of the basic demolition skills are left aside for, you know, the more concerned with blowing open doors is blowing bridges. Can you see that?
Yeah,
this is my feeling. I'm prepared to believe I could be wrong, but, you know, you're asking me, so I'm telling you. I feel a lot of the discipline in the regiment is from when I was in. Mm. Now, you've got to understand that I was considered as a badly disciplined person. I never ever called an officer a boss. That's what you call prison officers, screws in the jail. Can you see that? You call them boss. But You know, and to me it's a breakdown of, you know, the actual respect thing. You know, the men affectionately call their officers boss. I'm sorry, I don't like it. Soldiers are growing their hair longer because, you know, of the urban scene in Northern Ireland, but I'm seeing guys walking about the town and they've got long hair. Surely if you need to grow your hair for a job, you'll be informed beforehand and grow your hair. You know, we seem to be breeding a jeans and t-shirt generation of soldiers. And it's not just here. I mean, I've been down to Chelsea Barracks there. I've seen Irish guardsmen walking down the road, and I cannot believe that those men were in the guards. You know, from the guards that I knew. But as I say, times are changing. Like, you know, for example, when I was in the army, there was no such thing as drugs. You know, it's a sign of the change in youth. And I've seen drugs erode an army away. And if they can erode away a Rhodesian army...
Is that right?
Yeah. They just rots the army.
What were they... What on dope? I mean, they were on smoking...
It's not the act of smoking it or the act of taking it. It's the act of the people that want it. I've got to go downstairs to get it. Can you see that? Yeah. You know, for example, if you get a man who joins the army as a private and he was smoking dope, by the time he gets to Sergeant Major, if he's still smoking dope, he's got to go to one of the privates to get it. Because they're the people with the contacts. And it just breaks it, rots it, man. Corrodes it away to nothing.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. We've finished. Yeah. We've finished it. I thought we'd go on. We're going on other subjects. But thanks very much indeed for coming in. Not a tape for the faint-hearted, undoubtedly. Thanks very much indeed. Right. Well, let's.
Do you think there's any?